This is Up All Night on 5 Live. I'm Dotton, and in bio. 0205. Oh, sorry, my mind went somewhere else. I do apologise. Back on 0500 909693 is the number to call if you'd like to join us for our gadget phoning. I need a bit of a gadget as well to work out my thoughts sometimes. At least I'm doing it off the top of my head, say. I'm not reading from the script here, you know. 0500 909693. Could do it without looking. If you'd like to join us for our gadget phoning this morning, if you've got an issue with any gadget at home, whether it be a TV, a radio, a computer, video games, or a phone perhaps even. Whatever the gadget might be electronically, our gadget detective can help you solve your problem. 0500 909693 is the number to call if you'd like to talk to him directly about the issue in your household with regards to a gadget. You can text him on 85058 or you can email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. Fevzi Turkel is the man in question of gadgetdetective.com. Fevzi, good morning.
Morning, Dotton.
Yeah, you see what I did there, didn't you?
Yeah, I know what you did there, yeah. Where are you?
I'm on the planet Earth. I got that one right, in any case.
Enough.
Yeah, I didn't mess around with that.
I'm going to fit you with a GPS.
Well, funnily enough, talking about, you know, the planet Earth, and the big story this morning is about cryogenics.
Yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, I heard that.
In all the papers. We've already had one text here. Actually, it's a tweet. I should be more correct in saying that. It's a tweet which refers to the gadget phoning as well as the story of the day, which says, this is from John, it says, "My cryogenic chamber doesn't hold a steady temperature. Does your gadget guy have any tips to fix it?"
Yeah, switch it off for 48 hours, let it fully defrost, and then switch it back on again. If it doesn't come back to life or death within 48 hours, then it's probably not an economic repair.
Right.
Get yourself a new one.
Okay, so we've got 90 minutes or so of that. Is it 60 or 90 minutes? Are you with us for an hour?
60.
Okay, for an hour. So between now and 3 o'clock, if you've got any questions for Fevzi, do make sure you give him a call, 0500 909 693. Here's an email, a genuine email question. Or the other one was genuine as well. What I should say is a proper one. From Nigel in Salford, who's emailed about a problem for you to solve. He says he's got a Kindle Paperwhite e-reader. He's had it for 19 months and then it developed a problem. It's frozen on the Kindle screen, the picture of a kid reading under a tree, that is. He says he's tried everything, pressing every combination of buttons, powering up in every different way, dozens of times, following every internet forum line of inquiry. Done this for 3 months now. He hasn't given up. He keeps the faith. It's still a new device. He even phoned Amazon Kindle. Very easy to get them on the phone from his Kindle account, but they have no solution. They say it's quote-unquote bricked. Had nothing else to add, even though it's only slightly out of warranty and clearly not designed for a total lifetime of 90 months. There's only one final thing he could do, but it seems pointless. He feels the problem might be the battery. On YouTube, I have watched, he says, over and over, this surgical operation in which you remove 17 screws in 3 layers to get at the battery and take it out. But all I could then do is put it back in. The battery isn't replaceable. That's perhaps why Amazon insists that it's quote-unquote bricked.
Yeah.
Seems wrong. Help. Say something clever. Restore justice in the tech world order, he says.
Okay, well, first of all, my sympathies, Nigel. So the term bricked refers to when your device develops the functionality of a brick, i.e. becomes completely useless. It gets itself, or it becomes in a position where you can't reset it, you can't update it, you're basically stuck. And in its true sense, there is no way around it.
Yeah, but you don't expect to hear that from the company themselves. You know,
Devices can be bricked, but the point is this: the warranty on it may be 12 months, but last time I looked, we're still in the European Union. We have protection under consumer laws which are compatible with the EU, which essentially say that your item has an expected lifespan. Now, I'd say that Kindle Paperwhite, that's not even an entry-level ebook reader. That's sort of upper mid-range in amongst all the Kindles, the top of the range being the Oasis. And with a device like that, I would say you could reasonably expect that device to last 3 to 5 years. Now, Amazon may not like it, but I think you can press them for either a refund or at least a partial refund, either in cash or that you can put towards a new device, because it's not acceptable. The expected reasonable lifetime of a device of that nature is not 19 months. It's, in my view, it's 36 months to 5 years. And therefore, your entitlement under law, if you were to pursue it, would be that proportion of its reasonably expected life that you haven't had from it. So let's say it was 38 months that you could reasonably expect, and that you'd had 19 of those, then you could reasonably expect to get half your money back. And I would pursue them on that. There are standard letters online that you can look up and send to them amongst these things. I think Amazon, when pressed, will sometimes honour a 2-year warranty,
Except that Nigel in Salford has admitted that he has taken those 17 screws out of the back of it, and I wonder whether he's compromised his warranty by
his own admission, he did that after the fault developed, and by their own admission, the machine is already bricked, so there was nothing to lose. So my contention would be, it doesn't change a thing. The machine was already irreparable by their definition when he took the screws out. Now, I probably wouldn't have gone as far as Nigel, and I would have reported it the first day I had a problem. By the way, this is the general advice I'd give to people. When something goes wrong with your device, even if you think you can fix it, or it just needs a reset, or, you know, the wind's blowing in the wrong direction, doesn't matter. Report it to your vendor, your retailer, straight away, because the earlier you report it, the more likely you are to be either in warranty or less out of the warranty, as it were. But I think with a bit of pressure, Amazon may well make good on this, either in part or in whole. And I would suggest to Nigel that he points out that we've spoken about it here, that we'll be speaking about it in 2 weeks' time, and that we hope for a happy result in the meantime.
Let's speak to Robert in Glasgow. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
You've got Fevzi on the line. Go ahead.
Hello. I wonder if you can help me. I like to watch the football on the BT Sport app. But when I do that, using my laptop, I got a lot of missing frames and a jerky picture. I can watch BBC, ITV, Sky Go. I get a perfect picture. I've had them check the internet speeds and all that. I'm getting 46 MB download and 12 MB upload. They've tried everything at their end. They said that everything's fine. And they were wanting to charge £130 to come out and fix the problem. It seems a bit extortionate, you know.
Yes, I agree. I mean, those speeds that you've quoted are more than healthy. What sort of internet do you have? Do you have fibre internet?
I've just switched over from Sky to get the fibre.
Yeah.
That would fix the problem.
Yeah, well,
BT Infinity.
I mean, for a service like that, you don't need 48 megabits per second. You need 2, 3, 4, something like that to make it work. Uh-huh. So it's not the speed of the internet.
With Sky, and I was only getting 3 or 4, and I thought if I changed over to this, maybe that'll cure the problem, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand. How is your BT box connecting to the internet? Is it connecting wirelessly or through a cable?
Wirelessly, but I've even tried it with the Ethernet cable in it, and it's just the same.
Okay,
so
at the time that you're trying it, how are you testing those speeds? Are you running something like speedtest.net or?
BT did it itself when I phoned out to complain about
it. They ran a speed test
as well.
Well, it's not the speed unless there's something else which is hogging data at the same time. Have you got anything else that might be,
my wife maybe uses on her phone the Facebook.
That's right, but you're not downloading, film libraries in the background. Okay, so it's you've got plenty of data coming into it, which would tend to suggest that it's either the device or the software running on the device. It is a tricky one. You should ask them if there's anything else that they'd like you to do by way of diagnostics before calling the engineer. And I would suggest to them that if you followed all of their advice about pre-diagnostics that you can carry out, that you don't think it's fair that you may be held accountable. This is very standard. I mean, BT do this with phone line faults as well. I guess the other option is maybe to send the device to them rather than them send an engineer out. They may not go for that because they may want to test it in situ.
It just seems strange. I can watch every other station, bar the PT Sport app, you know.
Yeah.
I can watch Sky Go, you know, wirelessly, you know, and they got a perfect picture. Or the BBC, ITV, you name it, I got a perfect picture, no jerkiness at all.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, I think that there is a fault. It may be in the software. I guess it's not in their service in that it will be working for other people. You haven't got any means of testing it on another device. Would they send you another device to try it on?
I don't know. See, I had a small tablet thing, a 10-inch thing, but it's no longer compatible with BD Sport. Mm-hmm. So I should have tried that, you know.
Okay. I mean, the other approach you could take is this. You're paying them for a service which you're not receiving in part. You're receiving some service, but you're not receiving everything that you're paying for. I would maybe try and put the onus on them and say to them, you know what, I'm going to cut what I pay you because I'm not getting the service. Because there is some, you know, I'm not a lawyer by any means, but there is a legal argument to be had that
they want your business.
Yeah, if you're receiving only part of what you're paying for, then maybe the argument is the other way around, that the onus is on them to fix it. But BT, they're not the only company, I have to say, but they are notorious for this. They do the same on your telephone line. They'll say, we'll come out, we'll send an engineer, but if it turns out to be your fault, then we're going to bill you an engineer's time, which is prohibitive. Mm. And I've known people sort of live in fear of this for over a year and put up with, you know, noisy phone lines and so forth. At some point, you either have to dump them or bite the bullet and take the chance. But I would, as I say, try and ask them for all the advice that they can give you of what you can test. And if it passes all those tests, then you've reasonably done all that you can. And if an engineer then finds otherwise, then the fault was with their advice before the engineer was called.
Robert, thank you very much for the call. Incidentally, Fevzi, you know, a moment ago you said that essentially a brick, when it's bricked, is useless, yeah?
Mm. Well, you can build houses with it.
Well, yeah. Andy's just made that point.
I was thinking in technological terms, yes.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you said that. And, you know, building houses is technological. But anyway, yes. Tony Liverpool says he's got a solution for, you know, Nigel, who's our caller who had the problem with the Kindle. Mm-hmm. And Tony's solution is that he should buy a book. Anyway, 0500 909 dear. It's not that kind of a phone in, mate. 0500 909
To which the answer is, it is a book.
Yeah,
it's just not made of papyrus.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. 0500 909 pick up the phone, give us a call. If you've got a problem, any gadget problem that Fevzi can tell you, try and sort out for you on your behalf. David in Manchester is with us. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead. You've got Fevzi with you. Go ahead.
I recently got an iPhone 7. Got it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Went out on a night out this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Dropped my phone. Smashed the screen into bits. And I rung my insurers, which is with my provider.
Mm-hmm.
And they've told me that they can't repair the phone because Apple haven't released the screens yet.
Right.
And they can't replace the phone because the insurers haven't got any iPhone 7s. Apparently they're the last people to get them or something. I just want to know where I stand with that.
Yeah, I think I'm hearing a nonsense alert in my ear.
Yeah.
David, okay, so you don't have AppleCare Plus with Apple. You insured the phone by another insurance policy. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and this other insurance policy, was it specifically for, was it an add-on to your domestic insurance, or was it a separate gadget policy? What was it?
Separate gadget policy.
Okay, and this gadget policy undertakes to repair or replace?
It does, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's your answer. I mean, everything else is detail. If they can't repair it, they have to replace it. And do you know what? You can walk into a store and buy one.
But what I don't understand is you said, David, and sorry to cut you, Fergie, you said that the insurance was with the provider of your phone. Yeah. So presumably the provider.
It was one that my provider sold to me.
So your network, yeah.
Because I'm,
But shouldn't they be replacing?
I get it.
Shouldn't they be replacing the phone, Fevzi?
Well, that's the insurance policy. So the provider has sold an insurance policy.
Right.
They may well have branded it. It may be a third party insurer rather than most likely is a third party insurer. But it doesn't really matter. I mean, the devil with this, David, is in the detail. Read the terms of your insurance policy. You've paid them. For insurance on certain terms, and that's a contract. They have to fulfill it. Those are details of whether they can get the screens. It doesn't matter, because if they can't repair it, they can replace it. And believe me, you can buy iPhone 7s and 7 pluses, and even if there is a wait, well, so be it. Let there be a wait.
Yeah.
But their responsibility is to replace it and to do so within a reasonable time if they cannot repair it. And almost every insurance policy will say that. But read the detail of the policy and quote back the relevant parts to them.
And don't get me wrong, David, but I go out on the Raz and I drop my phone all over the place. The screen never cracks. You know why?
Why?
Oh.
It's a Nokia 100.
No. Now you're taking a mickey, don't I? No, because I've got the case around it, mate. I've got a case, haven't I?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That is
what I would say. And supposing they don't, Fevzi, you've given him all this advice. Supposing they don't replace the phone.
There's an insurance ombudsman. I mean, you can take it further. It's a matter of contract. You could sue them. You could make a complaint to the ombudsman.
He's got a life to be getting on with. He can't be going around suing
people.
Yeah, but
David, how much did you pay for the phone?
It's on contract, so with the insurance, pay £65 a month.
Yeah, and they're not going to let you stop paying those contractual terms.
I've asked them about that.
So they want their cake and eat it, don't they? £65 a month. Is that a 12, 18 or 24-month contract?
24.
24
times
65.
They need to replace that phone, mate. I mean,
they need to do it quickly, and they need to suspend the payments they should have a few days, a week or two to come up with it.
If you're paying the insurance on that, I mean, it should be the people who sold you the phone in the first place, is what I think. You need to go to them and ask them either to suspend the payment or to give you a new phone.
Well, I've asked them that. And to give me a new phone, they want £1,000 off me for the phone.
They'll need to cancel my contract.
David, read your insurance policy details. Yeah. If you haven't got it, download the full text of the policy.
You're probably going to need a magnifying glass to read it as well.
Do you know what? It won't be that tough. Most of it, will not be relevant to what's happened here. Mm. You'll be able to find that you need to look at the definitions, and you need to look at the clauses that relate to it. And, most of these things are written in not plain English, but you'll be able to get the thrust of it, quote it back to them, and just give them a reasonable period, give them 7 days to either repair or replace it. And assuming the insurer is a third party, also look in the policy to see if there's provision to cover your monthly payments whilst the phone is not in action.
And mate, if you're listening on the next gadget phoning, do text or email in and let us know how you got on.
Yes, come back next time and we'll name them, shall we?
I'm not sure about that.
That's quite right. Well, we can do it by process of elimination. Yeah. There aren't many.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. 0500 909693. Let's speak to Lawrence in Leicestershire. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Hiya.
Hi there. I'm thinking of buying an Apple Mac. And one of the uses I'm in mind for it is to run a second operating system over on top of macOS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are two solutions out there, but two solutions that will run simultaneously as the macOS, so you can sort of, interact with both operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
One being Parallel, which is an Apple product, and the other, VMware Fusion. So,
what was the other one, please?
VMware Fusion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Um, I, I really want to know what sort of, you know, hardware capacity I should be looking for, you know, in terms of processor speed and so forth, and whether, you know, what are the sort of, you know, advantages of one over the other and so on.
Sure. Okay. Lawrence, is the other operating system going to be Windows?
Yes, Windows 7.
Okay. So you've got a number of options here. If you buy an Apple Mac, you can, without using a virtualized solution such as Parallels or VMFusion, I'll explain what that means in a moment, but without doing that, your sort of cheap and cheerful method is to use a utility that Apple provide called Bootcamp.
Yes.
And Bootcamp, it basically allows you to partition the drive, the hard drive, into two virtual parts. On one part, you'll have the Mac OS, as it's now called, operating system from Apple. On the other, you will install your current version of Windows. By the way, that won't work with Windows 7. It has to be a more recent version. So if Windows 7 is a requirement, Bootcamp is no longer a possibility on current versions of Mac OS. So the benefit of doing that is you don't have to pay for any additional software. And in theory, it should be faster because it's running directly and not virtualized. It's running against the metal, as they say. So that's the theory. In practice, virtualized solutions where you're running Mac OS, but as a program within that, you're running in a box, a virtual box, another operating system. So that could be, if you're running, you know, Parallels, for example, it could be various versions of Windows, right back to very early versions. You can run Android, you can run Linux, you can run all sorts of things, which Bootcamp will only support Windows and some versions of Windows. So that's one difference. The other benefit of something like Parallels is that you can run it in different modes, and some of those modes give you some of the benefits of the, like, for example, gestures. Now, gestures on Macs are very nice. They've got very nice large trackpads on the laptops, and, you know, those sort of two-finger swipes and those, the sort of gestures that maybe you're more used to making on the screen of a tablet, can then be utilized within the Windows side of things. And it also makes moving information between Windows and Mac and back more easy. So both VMware and Parallels are great. I have more experience of using Parallels. Some time ago, I made a decision to use Parallels, and therefore, you know, the bulk of my knowledge is there. But both are good. Both are, you know, up there. Both are very competitive, and those are the two big names, certainly. So you could consider, you know, either or both, and I think they have trial versions as well, so that might be a solution as well. In terms of, you asked me about the specifications. Very good question. So if you've got two operating systems running at the same time, which is what will be the case, so you'll have on top of your Mac OS, you'll have another virtualized operating system running, then each of those will require resources in the way that any operating system and software that it runs will need. Most importantly, processor power and RAM. Okay, so if you, I would not try that with less than 8 gigabytes of RAM, and I would be more comfortable to have 16 gigabytes, particularly with a Mac, because most of the Macs now can't have their RAM upgraded. Okay, in most cases, it's soldered in. There are some exceptions. Some of the.
So they did that on purpose as well.
Yes, because, for example, if you take the Mac Mini. The 2012 model, the late 2012 model of the Mac Mini, you could open it up, you could buy the 4-gigabyte model and open it up and put 16 gigabytes of memory in it. And why would you do that? Because Apple were charging an arm and a leg for the RAM. Equally, you could replace that slow rotating hard drive that they supply in there with a super fast SSD, and you had a really powerful machine, and it was available in quad core. 2 years later, they release a machine which only has dual core, even as buy to order options, and they're soldered in the RAM, and they've put a metal plate over the drive. So I believe that the current desktops, the iMacs, the 27-inch iMacs, have still got user-upgradable RAM. You should check that, but be aware that they're probably going to be replaced in the coming weeks and months.
They're not cheap, though. That's the only problem, is there?
Well, funny enough, I mean, I had a problem with is I got an iMac off a mate of mine for 200 quid. 200 quid is all I paid for it. And today I was trying to upgrade it with the latest OS, but it won't let me upgrade it with the latest OS because it's not one of the more recent iMacs.
No, it's too old. It's not supported.
Yeah, yeah. So I couldn't update it to Sierra or whatever it is. Yeah. I've got to leave it where it is, basically.
Yes.
And but, so what I was going to say, you can, Lawrence, you can get cheaper iMacs secondhand, but they've got ways and means of making them more and more redundant.
Yeah, I mean, so Lawrence, just sorry, because I probably need to move on, but just to say, the other thing to watch for is the number of cores on the processor, because with virtualization, one of the things you can do is allocate cores to the virtual machine. So if you've got a quad core, you could allocate two to the Mac OS, the native operating system, but you could allocate the other two to the virtual machine, and that will give you better performance. So you know,
you excited, Lawrence.
Yes, because it's given me another idea. Can you also, for example, allocate a different sound card to say, the Windows?
Yes, you can, because, for example, you could have an external sound card that would attach via USB, for example, and then, yes, you can make that available to the virtual machine so that the Mac OS would have a default sound card of, let's say, the internal one, and the Windows would have the sound card or audio interface, however sophisticated you want to be, of an external one that could then connect via, Thunderbolt or USB, USB 3, you know, there's various interfaces. So the short answer, having given you a long answer, is get a quad core if you can, and get at least 16 gigabytes of RAM, and probably get it from the outset if it has to be a Mac. You can go for secondhand Macs. They have a refurb store, which is worth looking at. They tend to be about 15% cheaper. But bear in mind that Apple have put up the price of almost all their devices by around 20% in the post-Brexit plummet of our currency. Even the refurbished ones went up 20%, which I thought was cheating, frankly, because that was built when the pound was stronger and sold in the UK. But, they put all of those ones up as well.
And Lawrence, we've got you excited enough. Thank you very much for the call. We've got to go to news, of course, Fevzy. 0500 909 693 is the number to call if you'd like to join us for this morning's gadget phone. You've got another half an hour in which you can call Fevzy up on 0500 909 693. I've got a thought about David in Manchester's iPhone problem as well. So, David, keep listening. I'll come back to you on that in just a moment. But first, let's get the latest Five Live headlines with Nick Hadfield.
This is BBC Five Live, available on the BBC iPlayer radio app. Up all night with Dotton Adebayo.
0500 909 693. If you've got a gadget question, I'm sure we can squeeze it in between now and 3 o'clock. Gadget detective, as ever, is Fevzy Turkup. Fevzy, I was just wondering about David in Manchester. Supposing he went to an Apple shop and went to the Genius Bar, you know, and sort of gave him... gave the genius a sob story and everything. Do you think they'd fix it for him?
I mean, it's always worth a go. It will be hard to get a Genius Bar appointment this side of Christmas, in some cases. But it is worth a go. But I think in this case, you know, especially if he hasn't taken out the the Apple Care Plus, probably the most that they would do for him is offer him a discount on another phone. But I think he can do much better than that from his insurer. I don't think there's any harm in it. But in a way, he'd be going begging cap in hand. And Apple do have discretion. They can deal with these things, you know. But I don't think they'd do a complete replacement. But it's always worth it.
It's not the golden bullet I thought it was. And we've got lots of calls. So just very quickly, Mike on the M5 going south says, my son's laptop broke after 19 months. I took it back to the PC World. Motherboard just stopped working. Not our fault at all. A claim through their out of warranty department resulted in a 65% refund. Sale of Goods Act states the item should work for a reasonable time, up to 6 years. Always pursue the company as your item should work a reasonable length of time, just like you said.
Nice. And that's what we were talking about with Nigel's Kindle, wasn't it? Yeah. So each type of item has an expected lifespan. You can actually research it. There are tables of this stuff online.
He does add a nice one, Fevzy, by the way.
Thank you. It's very kind. But yeah, no, absolutely. And fair play to that retailer for dealing with it properly.
Yeah. Mick in Merthyr Tydfil's with us. Good morning, Mick.
Hello, Gordon.
Hiya. How are you, sir?
Okay, man. You?
So, yeah, very well. So you're through to Fevzy with a gadget problem, I understand, yeah?
Oh, okay. I've got a Samsung tablet, 8.9, locked into 3 at the moment.
Yeah.
Now, I've never used it as a telephone. I've only used it as a reference thing. And when I was building a telescope, it suddenly went off, and I can't get it unlocked. Yes, especially for 30 quid. I don't intend paying 30 quid.
Mm.
It's supposed to be a bloody free country.
Well, easy on the language. Come on, Mick.
Oh, okay.
Apologies.
Still, 30 quid's 30 quid, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is a tablet that's got a SIM card in it, and you've used that SIM card with 3 to connect to the internet for various uses, even though...
Several times, and they closed the local office, you see?
Right. So
and I can't get through to the local one in Pontypridd on another phone, you know?
So you've been using this with a 3 SIM card inside it.
Yes.
And has that now stopped working?
Well, I couldn't get another one. And I've tried various places around here, and they can't get other SIM cards to work. In other words, it's locked in.
Right. But the SIM card in there at the moment is 3, and it was previously working, and now it's not. Is that right?
Yep.
Have you contacted 3 to ask them why that might be? Is there something that's happened?
This is it. They won't answer their phone, man.
That's a bit ironic for a telecommunications company, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Well, if you go, I mean, have you got access to the internet other than via this tablet?
No.
Okay. Well, I suggest either. Well, we can. I'm sure we can look this up. Mick, leave some contact details. I'll get you some contacts for 3 where you can ring them up and speak to them. Because what you've got to work out now has something happened with the SIM card, or was it a pay as you go SIM card?
Pay as you go.
And as far as you know, you've still got credit on it, do you?
No, I haven't got credit on it because they actually moved the office.
So from Merthyr Tydfil. Okay, but normally you can top up these things over the phone or at certain.
It wasn't used as a phone.
It doesn't have to be. You've had credit on that, and that's allowed you data that's enabled you to use the tablet on the internet. So that will only continue for as long as there's credit to pay for the data. I think
what happened was the credit ran out.
Yes,
and I've possibly misunderstood things. So it's 6 of one, half a dozen of the other.
I understand. So with the SIM card, Mick, you say you haven't used it as a phone, and you're right. People often use SIM cards in their phones so they can make phone calls, and they will either pay, so much prepaid, and then that will either pay for a bundle that gives them so many minutes, or it will use it up per minute as it goes along. But there are SIM cards that are in data devices that are not used as phones, such as tablets. And with those, if you've got a pay-as-you-go SIM card in there, that's to say not a contract where you have to pay them the same amount automatically each month for a fixed period, in those cases, you have to keep it topped up, because that money that you put on there is then spent on the data that your tablet consumes, in the same way that you might have a prepaid gas meter or electric meter, you have to keep it topped up in order to be able to, you know, have that service. So what you need to find, I understand that the local office where you maybe got the SIM or previously topped it up may have shut down or moved away, but there will be a standard phone number that you can ring to get that topped up, and you can pay by card, or you can go into a phone shop and top it up that way as well. Yeah, so you don't have to go.
Do you happen to know if of anywhere that actually will do this? say O2 or
Well, you see, if you're with Three and you've got a Three SIM card, you can continue with them, as assuming you are otherwise happy with the service. You can continue with them, and a lot of corner shops, a lot of news agents and mini markets and those sorts of places will allow you to top up. Or failing that, there is a number, Three will have a number that you can ring and do it. As long as you've got a payment card of some sort, then you'll be able to do it over the phone.
Okay. And Mick, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. We've got Leah in Kent as well with us. Good morning. Morning, Leah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you, and good to speak to you. So you're through to Fevzy, go ahead.
Well, I love gadgets and computers and things, and I have an 11-year-old PC. When I bought it, I bought a basic PC, and I took it to a shop, and I had a lot of extras added to it, extra memory, and so it would be a fast load and a lot of different things. Anyway, long story. I've had it upgraded since 3 times, but I have always found the upgrades superfluous to what I need it for. I've never really wanted to go to XP, and yet I had to go to XP. And then when Windows 7 came along, I had to go to Windows 7, and it's due for another maintenance check. And I feel this subtle pressure to get an upgrade. Online, it says Windows 10, Windows 10. So download Windows 10, but I don't want Windows 10. Does that make me strange?
No, makes you wise in many people's view. So carry on. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No. I was listening. See, the thing is that as much as I love new stuff, I love it. I've got lots of devices, but many of those devices I don't use because I use my PC. I work, but I'm also a student. It does everything I need it to do, and I don't need anything else. And so, when I take it, why is there this subtle pressure to keep upgrading when it's not necessary?
Yeah, well, you're quite right. Their need to sell you new products and services is based on their business model, and it's you know, from Microsoft's point of view, it's terrible. People got Windows XP and were happy with it for 13 years and didn't buy another operating system. And it was only when they said, you know what, we're not producing any more security updates for it, that then we had to change our advice to people and say, go at least to Windows 7. However, you're currently on Windows 7, yes?
Yeah.
And the machine is working, and you're happy with it other than this pressure.
Well, look, totally.
Stick with Windows 7. First of all, it works for you. Secondly, they will continue to provide you with updates, security updates for it for a number of years yet. And 11 years old, that machine is doing well. I would not be spending any further money on that machine. Use it, be happy with it until it dies, and then buy a new one at that point.
Well, the thing about it is that the case is a good case. I've never had to change the motherboard. Nothing has broken down on it. Mm. It's got the original fan and the original hard drive and everything. And and all I do is occasionally take it in to be serviced, and I don't.
But
want
how much does that service
into upgrade?
How much does that servicing cost you, if I may ask?
The last one cost me $70.
And you're doing that every year?
No.
How often are you doing that?
2 years ago, they gave me Windows 7.
Okay.
But I said to them, do I have to have Windows 7, really? Mm. And it was sort of like this little subtle pressure in there. It only added £15 to the to the service charge, so it wasn't like it was a big deal.
I understand. Well, look,
it's not the money at all. It's not about the money.
It's about the principle. Well, you know, you're right, and I often say to people, you know, don't necessarily, you know, replace your phone or your camera every year. The way to get the best out of some technology, and particularly things like cameras, for example, is to know your device really well, which you never get to do. And I'm the ultimate example of that, because I've got a different phone every 2 weeks, and I never quite get into the depth of it in the way that I would like.
Well, you're sort of in the business,
aren't you? Yeah, and that's my job, to use it and get to know it as best I can in the time that I have with it. The reason for going from XP to 7 would now be that 7 as an XP is no longer supported, and that
which
would
I'm very unhappy about.
Yeah, but you know, to be honest, you're lucky you're not with Apple, because they won't support a device for 13 years. Apple have just rendered redundant some iPads that can be as little as 2.5 years old by cutting off updates to them to the latest operating system. So. Don't upgrade any further. First of all, you don't want to spend any more money. Secondly, Windows 7 is working well for you. Thirdly, every time you upgrade, you run the risk of that Windows, the new Windows, not being fully compatible. Maybe that older machine with the older hardware, and it may not have the drivers required to run every component.
They've explained that to me. Yeah. They've explained to me how you can have the drivers.
Yeah. I would say leave well alone. Okay. And I would also say to you, I'd personally lay off those £70 services as well, frankly. I mean, you can, but bear in mind, if you were to spend £250 to £300 on a brand new machine, it would come with a warranty. It would be infinitely faster, significantly faster than the machine you have now, despite all those upgrades. And there are some basic limitations to your machine now that no upgrades will change, because that main circuit board, the motherboard, has limitations on how fast the memory can work, how fast the data can flow to and from a hard drive. And also that hard drive, is it the original hard drive?
Yes.
So that is well past the life that you would expect it to go. So I would say, if you are going to continue using that physical hard drive, the spinning hard drive that's in there, you must keep regular backups, because that device, you know, they tend to start dying even after 5 years. So, you know, you've been lucky with it, but don't push your luck. Make sure you've got backups, and I would say, you know, take that £70 that you're going to spend every couple of years and put it in a kitty. And when this machine, you know, goes to heaven, use the money in the kitty towards a new machine.
My £200 computer ain't ever going to heaven. It's going to live forever.
Probably because it's evil.
I'm with you, Leah. It's cryogenic, that's why. I'm with you, Leah. And thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. Oh, very quickly, Stephen Coventry says, could you give me a list of cheap Android mobiles that I can use HDMI on, please?
That's a good question. I think, the HDMI connection is a bit... The cheap Android phones that I would look at are things like Motorola Moto Gs. It depends what you mean by cheap and how big a screen and so forth you want. The HDMI connection I would need to check. But check out the Motorolas, because they tend to be good value for money.
I think we've established that £200 is cheap on this programme. Bob in Norfolk. Good morning, Bob.
Morning.
Hiya.
Not so bad.
Good. You got a question for Fevzy? Go ahead.
Oh, I have. I've just turned 50. My big sis and one of my aunties clubbed together to buy me a telly.
Yep.
I moved into a new place. Doesn't make any difference. But anyway, the stall, I live in Norfolk, so you'll have to... If you don't understand a word, you'll have to, you know, help.
I can understand anyway. You perfectly, Bob. Clear as a bell.
Well, I'm a Norfolk boy, so there you go.
Don't worry, anyway, I've got a translation machine on my phone, so you carry on.
You'll need it. I didn't get it from Norfolk. I live right on the border as such, and I got it from a place in Suffolk. I went in, my sister gave me a copy of the printout of the order form, took it in, picked up the telly, fine, took it home. I don't watch normal telly. I don't have an aerial connection. I can't be asked to watch normal telly. Right, fine. And I started watching the DVD on it. I went through all the instructions, and after about 25, 30 minutes, it stalled. Mm-hmm. It just froze. I couldn't do anything with it. Anyway, I went away for about 2 or 3 days, put it back in the box, went back to the store again, and just explained to this person what happened. She went, oh, okay, you know, can you lift the box? She went, oh, the remote controls and the cable's still there. Bear with me. Less than a minute, she came back again with another one, exactly the same model.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this is good. But when I went, my dad took me, went back towards the car, and I said, that was a bit too easy for me. And plus, she gave me a receipt.
Mm.
Same thing happened.
What, she sold you a second one?
No, not sold me, gave.
So what was the receipt, if you don't mind me asking?
What was the receipt of me having the telly?
I see. Okay.
Right. And the same thing happened. So I thought, oh, good. So I took them back to the same place again, and they said, we can't give you another one. And I said, because I've explained it, this is like the third. And they said, well, no, you've got to send it. It says in them, you know, the whatever the booklet, you have to send it away. And I said, well, who's paying for that? And they said, you have to.
Send it to whom, Bob? To the manufacturer or to somewhere else?
Yeah, the manufacturer.
Right. Okay. Well, look, briefly, your contract is with your retailer. There's no requirement. There's no requirement for you to send it back to the manufacturer. You've been more than reasonable by accepting a replacement. They've been reasonable by providing you with one. Unfortunately, the replacement has suffered precisely the same problem. You're well within your rights to argue that there's an inherent fault. Or an inherent incompatibility for your use. You've made it clear to them what your use is because you explained the problem you were having when you took back the first one. Therefore, it's time to ask for a refund, not for another one.
And thanks for the story as well, by the way, Bob. Let's speak to Jazz in Brighton. Good morning, Jazz.
Yes, hello, good morning.
Hiya.
Martin and Beverly.
Hello, Jazz.
Hello. I'll keep it short because I know we're coming up to the hour.
One of us has to.
Yes, well, I've had an old Samsung for 15 years. I want to carry on using it, but I do want to get a new iPhone just to take photographs. Now, which iPhone should I get? Yes, for the camera.
Okay. Is it literally to take photographs?
Yes, because I want to carry on using my old Samsung to make phone calls.
Okay. I'm going to be a bit old school here and agree with Dotton. The best camera on any iPhone is on the iPhone 7 Plus, and it is one of the two or three best cameras on any smartphone available, the others being from Samsung and Google, the Pixel. But those still have small sensors. I mean, they're good for smartphone cameras, but, you know, a Sony RX100, which is a compact pocket camera, you know, there are various versions of that. Even the version 1, which is still on sale, and I think they're up to version 5 now, will outperform that camera immensely. The benefits of having a camera on a smartphone are twofold. One, it is always with you, and the best camera you've got is the camera you've got with you. There's no point having a big digital SLR that's you only take out twice a year because you can't use it if you don't have it with you. That's advantage number one of the smartphone camera. Advantage number two is if you then, having taken that picture, want to share it either with other individuals or you know, pop it on Snapchat or you know, Twitter or whatever, then it's much easier because what you don't have to do is pop out a memory card from a conventional digital camera and then upload it into your laptop and then send it up from there. But if your concern is taking really good pictures, having good control over the camera and getting the best quality for your money, then
yes, and especially one that will work at night, so low light.
Okay, yes. So again, that's partly bound by two things: the size of the sensor. So the sensor is the electronic detector which replaced the film in a conventional camera. So it's where the light hits after it's been through the lenses. So one is the size of the sensor. The rule of thumb: bigger the sensor, the more light it can capture, the better the quality. The other is the aperture of the lens, i.e. how much light can that lens let through, and you know, what flexibility does it give you? Does it give you a physical zoom, for example? So with both of those, you know, an iPhone 7 Plus will depending on which one you get, and I wouldn't bother with the 32 gigabyte model for various reasons, you know, will cost you something, you know, around the 800 plus, you see.
£800?
Yes, for a top, if you wanted a top end. If you wanted a more basic iPhone that will still give you good quality, then you go for the iPhone.
I want the most basic, please.
Okay, if you want one that still has a good camera, the iPhone SE is in Apple terms a bargain, because it's, depending on the memory you get, it's around the £400 mark. It's still not cheap, but it's a lot. You know, it's still a lot cheaper. I would say to you, look, if you want a camera and you don't want to be spending hundreds and hundreds of pounds, you know, get yourself a decent compact camera and look at the Mark One.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Look at the Mark One Sony RX100, because it's a brilliant camera. It's compact, high quality, and it's got all the knobs on it, so that you don't you can control and see what's going on.
Jazz, thanks very much. And this very quickly, Fevzy, we're still betting on with XP on a laptop. My friend has just changed his broadband supplier to Sky, and whilst we have excellent signal strength to the hub, it won't open any websites. How can that be?
It could be that it's being blocked by your firewall, so you have to see if the firewall is allowing access to various services and see if that's set up correctly.
Okay. Fevzy, thanks very much. Thanks for all the calls, texts and emails as well.
First for news and the best live sport. This is BBC 4.